Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 3rd, 2014. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, sour homebrewer Gail Williams shares a couple of experiments. One, comparing how a hoppy 100% Brett beer ages versus the same beer pitched with Saccharomyces. And another experiment testing the effect of adding pasta to the fermenter of a sour beer. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. Our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on Google Plus, too. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us first and go to our website, click on our Amazon ad. It will take you back to Amazon where you can shop as you normally do. It won't cost you any extra, but you'll be benefiting this show. We greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes and our Android app on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app, and we're on the Windows Phone directory, too. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at BasicBrewingShop.com. In the front is a blank calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews. So even if you buy one now, you will have 12 months of brewery planning in that calendar. And there's room in the back to log the details of up to 50 batches of beer. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who has done so already. Protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. It's going to warm up before too long. You'll need a growler bag to help insulate your growlers as you get them from those tasty, and talented craft brewers around your area. Check those out at basicbrewingshop.com as well. And finally, in the shameless plug department, it looks like I'm about to run out of our new bottle openers. That's never happened before. I've never run out of something in the store. I have ordered some more. So if they are out of stock in the store, don't despair. They will be back, as will the offer of getting a free opener with the purchase of one of our DVD combos. Lots of people are taking advantage of that as well. So if you don't see the openers or the combos on the shop, we are waiting for the next shipment of bottle openers. So thanks to everybody who's snatched those up already. I'm running a little late today, and Gail and I have a lot of tasty stuff to cover, so let's get to it. As you'll hear, Gail didn't waste any time in starting to brew sour beers once she got into home brewing, and she brews in small batches to allow her to experiment more easily. And I was very lucky to get to sample a couple of those experiments this week. Gail Williams, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you, James.
You are a rare bird here in this podcast. You're a brewer of the female persuasion.
Well, you know, that's changing, and I think it's changing super fast. And it's really interesting because 2008 was when I sort of accidentally fell into homebrewing. At the time that I first got into homebrewing, which is about 2008, where I accidentally got involved in the hobby through a weird series of peculiar incidents involving things like going on vacation to Norway and realizing that I was missing IPA the whole time and thinking, what's wrong with me? At some point I thought, okay, we're beer people. My husband Steve and I decided that we would put up the kind of a website that we wished that we had when we traveled for people who traveled to the San Francisco area. Lets people use our regional transit system, which is called BART. And it's called Beer by Bart. And we just put the site up to say there's places you can walk to from the stations. And at that point, we suddenly became deeply involved in the beer community. And it was an amazing transformation. We already knew some brewers, and we knew the bartenders at some places. But now we knew all the people who owned the bars. We sort of became part of the family. And it was really gratifying in many ways that our sort of public service initiative had led to that. At that point, I figured I really needed to learn a lot more about beer, and I was really waiting for a chance. And one afternoon, Steve came back from City Beer Store in San Francisco and said, "Hey, I was down at City Beer, and I was talking to this woman down there who's about to take a class from somebody who's a nationally ranked or beer judge or something like that about beer styles." And I said, "Oh my God, sign us up," which we did. And we didn't know till we got to the first class meeting that it was really a pre-BJCP certification course. So we spent this entire class saying, well, you know, we're not going to take the test, but this is really awesome. We're really learning a lot. And then at the end, I took the test and I judged for a little while. And I had that thing of walking in where, you know, there's like three women and 200 judges of the male persuasion in the room. And, you know, it was interesting. I was thinking, this is really like when I first had a tech-related job where you just feel like a pioneer. And it's really strange to be back in that equation again. But this split's cool. So for a little while, I would tell my fellow judges, I'm a beer judge. I'm not a home brewer, but just a beer judge. And if we were wine judges, no one would be saying who here makes wine at home. I think judging is its own thing. So it was a great rant, and it went on for a month or so. And then I said, "Damn it, I have to start making beer." So I made two total Saccharomyces batches, and then I said, "You know what? I think I'm only making sour beer because there's so much good commercial, wonderful craft beer in Northern California I don't have room for 5 gallons of a homemade IPA, but sour beer is always a little bit rare and special." In the years since then, I actually started making small batches. I mean, breaking down my batches and making 1 gallon or 2.5 gallon differentiated batches. So my sour beers have gotten rarer and more esoteric, but it's been an amazing experience, and I've really enjoyed listening to Basic Brewing because you've at least reinforced my idea of always splitting things. I'm not quite sure where I got the idea, but you know, from early on, I was thinking like, you know, I've got to learn fast to catch up with these dudes. So I better split my batches so I can learn something.
Well, there you go. It's an acceleration. That's another reason to do small batches.
Yes. Yes. And I see more women in the beer community all the time. I think it's going to change really fast.
Well, I'm all for it. I mean, because the more people that brew, the more beer there is, and the faster, you know, we all learn because you know, we're all learning from each other in this process. So
yes.
So you sent me some experiments.
Yes.
And let's start at the beginning. What's the first one we're going to look at?
Well, the first one, it was late last summer, going into fall, and I decided I wanted to make a session IPA, and then I figured, okay, I ought to be able to prove that I can do a clean Saccharomyces beer in my kitchen. We're not sure if this is true, but it's probably true. and that was all good, and I wanted to do a little beer, and you know, it seemed like a fun thing. And I figured, you know what, I ought to split this and do half of it as 100% Brett fermentation. And, you know, if you've listened to people or you've tried any of the 100% Brett beers, they're much cleaner than lambic style mixed culture. It generally won't have some of the horsey notes and other more colorfully described notes. But they definitely will still taste like Brett. So the first beer, this is my little session beer. You've got two labeled bottles, but it wouldn't be very hard to tell if they weren't labeled. And what we're looking for here is my reason to do this, besides wanting to try more things, was to figure out whether Brettanomyces, which has a reputation of really scrubbing oxygen and helping preserve beers, would preserve the hop flavor and character better than a regular ale yeast would.
Yeah, Chase Healy of Prairie Artisan Ales in Tulsa, we visited with last week, yes, said that his Funky Galaxy beer, which has been around for a while, he says that the hoppiness seems to stick around more because of the influence of Brett.
And I think that this is one of those things that it's really great for homebrewers at any level, beginning or advanced, to check these things out for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of checking things out, I'm going to open the 100% Saccharomyces first. And you said to open it with a note of caution. Are you worried? Should I be concerned, Gail?
Well, to make our big confession, we're taping this on April Fool's Day, and it's, everything is sincere, except that there may be a big joke on myself because I've been opening, pairs of these beers for a little while now, since September, or early November, or early October. Anyway, a while. And I have come across two bottles that were Saccharomyces that seem to have picked up a little bit of Brett. And that's pretty, I thought, okay, I was very careful. I had brand new vinyl tubing. I had a new mini auto siphon that was my Saccharomyces only auto siphon. But my kitchen probably has a lot of Brett living in it. And so the character was different, but I can't promise you that we'll just have to see what we got.
Okay, here we drum roll, please. Here we go. that was refreshingly undramatic there.
Whoops. So there all that build up for nothing.
Well, that's good, though. It's good to be cautious. Okay, a quick sniff on that one before I pour the second one.
Yeah.
Now, talk about the recipe.
Okay, well, this is this was kind of interesting. I was we were driving by and happened upon a little homebrew shop that I had never seen before. We were on our way to drive up to Russian River, which is north of us, and stop for gas. And here's a homebrew shop, so we figured we should go say hi. I walked in, and then I figured we've been talking to these people. I ought to buy something. So this is a Session IPA partial mash kit. It was made with 4.5 pounds of Pilsner liquid malt extract, 2 pounds of two-row 75/100ths of a pound of wheat malt, 6 ounces of Crystal 30, 3 ounces of Cara Wheat, and 5 ounces of Cara Pils. Sorry, no metric on any of this because I didn't do my homework. put in Horizon at 60, 20, 10, and 0. And then Mosaic and Centennial added in for the dry hopping.
Mm. And how long have these been in the bottle?
This was late September was my brew day. So I split the batch into two, and Saccharomyces yeast in half and Brettanomyces as a 100% primary yeast in the other half. And I would expect the Saccharomyces yeast to start to fade, the hops to start to fade. We'll start to get even some hints of cardboard by now. I mean, this has been quite a long time for a small beer.
Yeah, there's a bit of difference in the carbonation. The Brett beer is a bit more carbonated. But the Saccharomyces beer is very fruity.
We're going to say maybe that's from the Mosaic hops.
Yeah, very tasty.
This is an Edinburgh ale yeast from White Labs, by the way.
Okay. Mm. The Brett beer it seems more bitter to me. I wish that I could do a blind tasting, but I'm here by myself. But there is a difference in the hop character. I wouldn't say that I'm getting any oxidative notes in the Saccharomyces beer, but it's certainly less interesting than the Brett beer. And there is a bit of funk in the Brett beer, but it's not you know, as overpowering as one might expect if you'd never had a 100% Brett beer. Michael Tonsmeyer sent us some 100% Brett beers a few years ago now, and we were amazed at how clean they were.
Yeah. I think that the Brett Silenza strain or subspecies or whatever it is of Brett, I think it actually will ferment a little bit cleaner is that's my current impression. But these are experiments that you have to do for yourself. And the Brett C, which was originally isolated from British ales, this to me, some people say tropical fruit, and I pretty much say leathery in some weird way, like not like not quite like your new car leather smell, and not quite like an old saddle, but somewhere in the general leathery family. And I definitely always get that from that yeast.
Mm-hmm. It does taste a little funky. Is such a generic term, but there is that kind of little bit of funkiness there. And leather is probably a pretty good descriptor.
But you're not getting like goaty, horsey.
No, it's not. It's not barnyard. It's not the kind of darker, funky notes that that I associate with some, funky again, funky beers.
Right.
These are kind of bright notes, and they blend well with the hops. I wouldn't think that that the Brett beer is as old as it is. It tastes like a fresh, hoppy beer.
So this is a fun thing to do, and it actually, it's if you buy some Brett, which unfortunately doesn't come in powdered form yet, and I'm just waiting for that to happen. I think that will be a signifier that the brewing world has really changed when the dry yeast people start making Brett. But you need to order it and stick it in your fridge. And if you're making a small batch, you don't have to worry too much about the number of viable cells, because the great thing about splitting a batch or starting with a small batch is you've got plenty of yeast to work with. And I actually just had this in my fridge for a couple of months in case I needed to do a Brett experiment at some point. But that's how my house is.
So you just pitched in the pitchable amount for 5 gallons into half that.
I did. It was a little bit old, but I also wanted it to, so I wasn't sure it was all viable. I know Chad Jacobson says that Brett doesn't actually really like cold temperatures all that much. So I thought, it's been like 3 or 4 months in here. On the other hand, it's like, I thought, if I'm over pitching Brett, I can't really see a huge downside for that. I mean, less of those. Some of the theories, which we should all probably be designing experiments for, are that Brett puts out a lot of the really strange and interesting and mysterious flavors and aromas when it's under more stress. And I thought, okay, less stress. We'll just go ahead. It's an easy little beer to make. Go on, little Brett. Have fun.
And if you're concerned about purchasing a pitchable amount, for a larger batch, what would you think about using the dregs from that small batch and using that into a larger batch?
Oh, that's a really good idea. And I think my only question for myself would be whether I, being a really hoppy beer, what that would do. Hmm. But, this Brett didn't seem to be too daunted by the hops, quite frankly. So, it might add a little bitterness if you were putting into a beer that you didn't want to, if you were going to go in a sort of more traditional lambic direction. But hey, the lambic brewers, they say they have like bitter lambic and sweet lambic when they're blending, so be it.
Well, did you see a difference in the performance of the two, between the two strains, as far as vigor of fermentation or attenuation after fermentation?
Well, this is really interesting to me because the Brett is, it can be super attenuative if it's in a mixed culture. But, I had this sort of typical experience that when you do 100% Brett in a sort of in a typical approximate amount that you would do with a, ale or maybe lager fermentation, that it actually, you know, it stalls out around the same point, and both of these came in at 10:10. So in 3 weeks, I tested them, gravity the same. So that was a really surprising. It was like, okay, it was a real easy wort. It just chewed right through it. All right. I did, you know, I suspect that if I, you know, I'm holding a few bottles for like, another 6 months or so. Another thing that I've noticed and other people have noticed that I'm keeping an eye on is that even though the Brett supposedly finishes out and acts like a normal yeast when it's all by itself, leave it in a bottle for a long time and there's still some viable cells, and some of them will probably wake up and slowly chew away a little bit more, and you could get more carbonation over time than you expect.
Well, that may explain the difference between the two.
Did you see like really fine bubbles in the Brett version?
I'm just looking in the Brett version. There's a sustaining head inside the bottle.
It's really crazy how it's like, I don't know. It's like the Brett and the hops together. They made this amazing, moussey, as they say, which I think is like a beer descriptor artifact left over from hairdressing of the 80s or something. But, you know, moussey, like we're all supposed to think of what moussey is like.
Or could it be chocolate mousse?
Yeah, it could, but I'm suspicious about the origins of these descriptions.
So big-haired people are writing the style guidelines. Gordon Strong is secretly a big hair 80s guy.
I just think that was what I think that's what all their girlfriends had kicking around in the, you know, at the time that they could compare it to. But you know.
I just imagine Gordon Strong in a hair band, you know.
Yeah, they're on the disco floor. You don't know what, and you know, we don't ask about anyone's past.
So those were cool. I definitely enjoyed the Brett beer better. Did you, in the beginning, did you see that big of a difference between the two as far as the hop character?
The hop character came through better in the Saccharomyces beer at the beginning because it didn't have another flavor in there. The Edinburgh ale yeast is quite neutral compared to something like Brettanomyces. So, I actually kind of like the Brett beer better all along, but that's just because I really like Brett, but can't help it. But I think the hop character and the mosaic character really, it really was shining in the simpler beer at the beginning. So there's no reason not to make both and finish the one that's not going to keep earlier.
Interesting. Let me make sure that I pour the equal volumes between the two. It may be that the Saccharomyces beer is a little bit darker.
That's interesting. Now, that could be an oxidation thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the only difference that I would expect to be going on here is that the Brett is continuing to scrub oxygen in a way that Saccharomyces won't be doing. But that, no, that's just my expectation. So
the the Brett beer is a little bit more cloudy, I think, because it shipped upside down because there's a little bit of sediment in the neck of the bottle. But that may just be some yeast in suspension that's given it, you know, kind of a lighter color. But it seems like to me that there's maybe half a shade darker from the Saccharomyces beer.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. I don't have them in front of me at the moment, but that sounds completely plausible.
Oh, that's a tasty beer. Boy, that's really nice. That's the Brett beer. Very nice.
Well, thank you.
I feel selfish that I'm here by myself.
Yeah.
I'll get over it, you know, I think.
Yeah, well, so it goes. You know, maybe a little more goes in the dump bucket, but it's all good.
Well, supper is after this, so.
Excellent.
All right. Now let's move on to the next thing on the list. And this is using an ingredient that I don't think that I have experienced in a beer before. Talk about this one.
Well, should I say it right off the top? Okay. This is spaghetti beer. So when I first decided I have to make sour beers, and I was pretty inexperienced, it was going to be my third batch. And I looked around and I found this really nice presentation by Steve Piatz. And you can also find a BYO magazine article online about the same thing. And it's a really wonderful, encouraging article about just using dry malt extract and making just going for it with your first sour beer. And don't worry about the different ways that that the lambic brewers did their turbid mash, et cetera, et cetera. So when I read that, I noticed there's a line in it that said, we're going to use malted wheat, DME, wheat dry malt extract, instead of a unmalted wheat, which is what would be authentic, because there's not an extract version of unmalted wheat. And so I was immediately going, well, let's see, what would be good? My flour would probably get all lumpy and clumpy, and you wouldn't want to put that into your extract boil. But wait a minute, what if you used pasta? But I didn't do it right then. I let it be, and I went around and did several other batches of sour beer. And at some point, I thought, I want to keep this easy and keep it, urban kitchen compatible. But I want those starches in there because I think it's different. I think maltodextrin is rather complex. You can put some of white maltodextrin powder in. It's a big sugar, but it's not the same as the raw starches. And so the first time I did one of these beers, I put boiled wild rice in because it was all exotic and interesting. And of course, I ended up with a sour beer. I couldn't taste the boiled wild rice in any way, and I didn't know what it did. So I started at some point. I started using pasta. It's nice. You can get beautiful heirloom variety whole wheat, organic pasta grown in the mountains of Italy or whatever. You can find amazing kinds of pasta. And they aren't going to clump. And then I thought, I don't really want them in the boil. And by that time, I had made a bunch of fruit sours where you end up with the you put the Brettanomyces in with fruit, and you end up with these like ghost fruits, like they're like a like the ash of a blueberry sitting in there. There's nothing left. It's been eaten through. And I thought, well, I'm just going to put the pasta in the fermenter. And I was thinking about this, and then I happened to have this great experience. I went to Belgium and walked in to Cantillon on a brew day that was unscheduled brew day. And I had met Jean Van Roy before, and so Jean Van Roy before, and he
Excuse
said,
me, Gail, you've dropped something. Oh, it's a
oh,
name.
sorry.
It's a name.
Well, okay. So anyway, the brewer at Cantillon, I met him before, and I was really surprised that he remembered us. And immediately when we got there, he said, "Oh, you have to taste my wort." And I'm like, "Okay." And I've had a lot of sweet substances, and sort of syrupy stuff, and then that would be fun. It was unbelievable to me. It was like cream of wheat. There was so much starch, and I was so shocked by that. And so then I'm like, okay, I'm definitely got to keep working on the spaghetti thing. So, where we're at now in this process is I'm trying to really sort of get the amounts down. And my thought last spring was I'm going to do a split batch, and I'm going to make one of them, and I'm using fortified with some maltodextrin that I got from the homebrew shop. It's long chain sugar. And I'm going to make another one that's extract that I'm going to put on spaghetti and split the batch and then see whether there are any sensory differences. So this is a 1-year-old lambic.
So I've got a couple of questions. Why wouldn't you just use unmalted wheat? And two, how did you prepare the spaghetti?
Oh, this is really good. Okay. So I've used unmalted wheat when I was doing an all grain version, although I didn't do a whole side turbid mash, which you can read a lot about. But I've done that. But the thing I was really fascinated in, this original Steve Piatt's recipe for keeping it super simple, I really wanted to have the easiest possible extract version of a lambic. And it became sort of, it sort of was like a challenge. So it's I was wanting to keep this all super simple ingredients. And since I'd already made a couple sour beers on fruit, and I realized how much time, having months of time for things to dissolve and then be soaked in alcohol and acid and then eaten, by our little friends, I realized that there's no reason to cook the spaghetti. That's just an annoying extra step. So I and I'm gonna remember here, I'm making this is a mixed culture beer. This is not a pure culture Brett beer like the last one. This is a sort of something in the lambic tradition. If you follow some of the early American homebrewers' versions of this, they would, you leave the fermenter open in the kitchen the first night to get your kitchen bugs in there, and then you pitch stuff, and there's all kinds of variations. And I thought, all right, there might be a little bit of bacteria on the spaghetti, but or whatever pasta I decide, I'm not sure shape matters here, but there could be, but that's probably similar to introducing some minor things that are going to go away when the alcohol and the acidity go up. So I put raw pasta into a half-sized butter bottle, and in the other one I just put in the maltodextrin powder. I can't tell you that I have a really good logical reason for the amounts that I put in. I kind of got carried away and put the whole package of pasta in after talking myself through having it be less than the package. So my science is a little weak on this, but I'm still really just interested in what the flavor contribution should be and whether this is, as I believe it is, worth the trouble.
So while I pour, I'm going to open the non-pasta one first.
Pasta
So
free.
you would think, I mean, would there be any advantage to? I mean, when you think of putting such things into a mash, you might think of boiling it to gelatinize the starches or something like that. You follow my kind of thinking there?
I do, and that's why I went for pasta, because I was thinking, what is a good, clean ingredient that can come in anywhere from cheap at the local grocery store to exotic and organic, et cetera, that is pre-gelatinized and 100% wheat? Well, that's what I've got. They already did all that for us in making the pasta.
Okay, I'm smelling.
Do you see, did you pour them both out?
Yes.
Do you see any differences in color and
Boy, they're close. Color-wise, they're very, to me, they're close.
Okay.
It looks like to me maybe the on this sample, maybe the pasta is a little, maybe, boy, they're close. It looks like to me maybe the pasta one, maybe just because of the way I poured, but it looks a little more clear, just a little bit more le or less cloudy than the non-pasta one.
Yeah, I think UPS shipped my beers upside down. Trapped.
What did you expect? I mean, what have you? No, what did that came out wrong? What did you anticipate me seeing, or what have you seen in the past?
I expected the whole wheat to be a little bit darker because I used whole wheat spaghetti, and there's a little bit of wheat husk material, or no, it's not really husk, but the wheat bran material that's in there too. But yeah, it's really subtle. This, I mean, this is a subtle thing. This is not like a, you know, oh my God comparison.
Oh. Oh my God. Boy, those are good.
Thank you.
Wow. Those are those are really good beers.
I'm glad you like them.
Oh man. So what you got the it's a Bug Farm mixed culture?
Yeah, this is a company called East Coast Yeast that does frustratingly small batches, yeah. So that you have to sign up and wait for them. But really, really lovely blends, and this is one of the Bug Farm cultures, which is a blend.
Mm. Oh my goodness! Very, very tart. But tart on the back end, but kind of free, kind of sweet on the front end, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I sort of thought a little lemony, but it isn't necessarily quite like any known fruit. You know, I think like, yeah, it's fruity, and you're supposed to then afterwards say what kind of fruit, and I kind of go, I don't know, fruit from another planet or something. It's just fruit.
I wish I'd done this blind, but is there a tiny bit of a dark flavor afternote at the on the pasta one? To you,
to me, I get more complexity. I mean, neither of them is horsey. I think there's a little bit more aroma on the pasta one, and I think it reminds me a little bit more of. A Belgian goose, but it might be I might be suggestible on that, of course, because that's what I was trying for. There is a phenolic note that one of them might have and the other not. A friend of mine calls this burnt circuit board because he's done too much high tech. And to me is a little bit like hot tires, and you get this a little bit in lambic sometimes. I get a little of that.
That I get in a little, just a teeny bit, kind of the burnt. If you've ever set a model airplane on fire,
well, there you go. That's the equivalent of a circuit board, right?
And
and
that's on the non.
On the non, okay.
So.
That's interesting. Okay.
But that, again, we can blame UPS.
What makes it a tougher comparison? Does one of them seem to have like a sort of a sugary note in the aroma? I wrote down that sort of like old-fashioned, like peach nectar from a can. I used to have that when I was a kid. It's like a little bit of a sweet aroma.
I'm going to have to come back with these. I think they're still pretty cold.
Yeah, it's a hard thing, and it's really hard to taste remotely.
Wow.
It's a great skill to cultivate, and I appreciate all the sessions that I've heard you guys do at Basic Brewing, where you try and walk through flavors, because it's a hard thing to describe flavors.
Yeah, it's hard to connect those things in your brain.
Yeah.
But man, they're both just complex and tart and. Really wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're just, and I don't know that. I mean, maybe as they warm up, maybe there'll be a big difference between the two.
But I think it's subtle.
Yeah. Do the bugs eat the pasta? What does the fermenter look like at the end?
Yeah, you know, and I've done this with a couple of different beers. This is a year old beer, and so it still looked like pasta at the bottom of the fermenter. I've done some that I left for more than a year, and the pasta was broken down to where it kind of into beads, where it looked almost like grains of rice. They were still just sort of falling apart, and. So there's certainly some things that can't be digested there, but a lot that can. And I actually wrote Steve Piatz, and you know, when I did this, I thought, you know, hey, I should tell him that this inspired it. And he said, well, it seems plausible that the bacteria would be able to break down the starch. So one of the things I want to do in the future is try putting some 100% Brett beer on pasta and see whether the bread itself can break the starches down, or whether this is the lactobacillus and pediococcus and so forth that would be in the mix.
Maybe just a teeny bit more, kind of the darker, funky notes from the pasta beer, but
I thought so. I thought it had more complexity. Neither of those is a really horsey, barnyardy beer at all. But no. I thought there was more complexity from the wheat. I preferred it, but it is subtle. And so in the future, I'm going to probably do a split batch that's about dosage. What's the right spaghetti dosage?
And triangle tests. That's,
oh, yeah.
You know, that's where you can do two of one and one of the other and do tastings and see if you're fooling yourself. it's always good to take your own brain out of the equation. But man, both of those are very nice.
Well, thank you.
And so the last.
Well, the last, I kind of threw this in. I didn't know whether you wanted to taste it on the show or taste it ahead of time as an audition beer to figure out if I could make beer or what what you might want to do. It's just one I really like. This one has a real name. It's Dawn Voyage, which was going to be Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And then I thought, I can't do a C.S. Lewis name for my homebrew. So it's called Dawn Voyage. And it's just it's an earlier blended sour, including a little bit of backyard ambient, where I tried my little open fermenter on the back porch project. Ended up blending it all out, which should tell you something right away. But it did add some nice complexity to later beers. And on this one, I put it all on two varieties of dried apricots. Mm. And was pretty happy with it.
Oh, my. The the aroma is kind of perfumey. And you can smell the fruit. I'm betting I could have picked that out.
Oh, so I should have said, perhaps stone fruit. See what you get.
Oh. Oh. Woo.
Sour.
Wow. Oh, but the first sip, you got the sweetness of the fruit. And that's where the different noises came from. The first impact was the sweetness of the fruit, and then it switched over to sourness, you know, as it went down. Boy, that's a fun beer as well.
I like this one, and this is for my When I first made a few sour beers that turned out too sour, and I started backing off, and then I realized, you know what, I kind of like one that's going to be like the most sour candy you ever had as a child that just really goes, whoa, wakes you right up.
Well, it's those, what are those, is it Sour Patch Kids or whatever, that they're sour and then they're sweet? This is kind of like the opposite.
Yeah, but definitely finishes sour.
But give us some details if people want to brew something like this at home, so that it's just not a show about me drinking good beers.
Okay, so as I started making these beers and realizing the power of split batches, especially if you don't have a lot of space or if all your other space is devoted to your other beers, you might want to have a lot of small containers with different sour beers in them that you can blend together. And so as well as deciding to add pasta to some and trying some other experiments, you know, that were a little out of the box, I often would do something like just have a high gravity and low gravity split. There's dilute part of the batch and put that in one and undiluted in the other, and then pitch the same lambic mixture or whatever you're using, and they will be different in 6 months. Hmm. The other thing, this seems to kind of be like sour spring on basic brewing.
Yeah.
you, had like a lot of related stuff lately. And if we go back to the goose blending program, this, you know, the a really key thing is to have some different flavors to play with. Some of the people who blend, you know, really suggest that you get kind of a neutral beer and put some of that in a glass and then add small parts of the funkier beers. And, you know, to be, I think my favorite quote about this is Lauren Salazar from New Belgium says, it's like adding petals to the daisy. So, So if you have a lot of funky beers sitting around, you can smell them and taste them and say, okay, what are the petals I've got to add to this daisy? And it's really kind of a nice way to think about it and look at it. I had a backyard or back porch beer. It was really odd. There was evidently, after a year in it, this was a plastic tub beer. I left it out overnight with, first of all, I had like one of those big net sort of brew in a bag bags over the top of it. And then I put some wooden folding furniture chair on top of it so the raccoons that go by wouldn't get into it. Because even though it's San Francisco, we got our wildlife. And so the next morning I was all excited and thinking about the deep mystic history of these amazing beers and, put it away for 6 months or so and tasted it. And it was like, well, this is interesting. It definitely had alcohol, wasn't sour. That was sort of a shock, and no trace of Brett and really odd notes, like a sort of, tasted like, pear, Lifesavers meets some kind of like mint, only not sort of minty, and it wasn't a hop mint. So I was like, this is totally weird. I'm gonna trust that it's out. You know, it definitely looks it attenuated. It's something alcoholic, but it's not what I expected. So I thought, okay, I'm going to bottle this. And several people tasted it, and they all thought, wow, that's so weird that this is what the local flora and fauna tastes like, and this is our microbiota. And at some point I thought, you know what, it's not really delicious. But I figured, okay, what if I use this as a blending element, which I did. And so there's a little bit of that in this beer, and it's pretty submerged because there's fruit in it. So I blended my sours, and I then prepared a plastic bucket because it's my favorite thing for fruit, and I put a lot of chopped dried apricots, two varieties, in the bottom, and gently transferred this blend that, you know, racked over my blend, and usually it's about 3 months on dried fruit is plenty of time. I got interested in dried fruit partly because that's the Russian River method, and and those are my, you know, sort of our home base long time sour beers, and also because when I was doing these the wild beer experiments, I get all really interested in making sour beers and then blending beers so I could empty some carboys in the winter time. Because you need cold air to supposedly get the right organisms in the air. And so in the wintertime, you can't get the kind of summer fruit flavors unless you use dried fruit, in my opinion. I think they have a much more spectacular flavor than canned fruit does, for example.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about doing the porch fermentation. I still have my Erlenmeyer flask of my starter that I made with my fig from my fig tree.
Ooh.
In the fall or the end of the growing season. And I still haven't done anything with it. It's just still sitting there, mainly because I'm kind of afraid of it.
But does it smell good?
Well, let me smell it. Let's do an update.
Ooh.
Here.
On the. Oh, great.
It smells a little. It doesn't smell bad.
Okay. But doesn't smell like nail polish. You're already way ahead of the game. This is good.
It smells a teeny bit cheesy.
Hmm.
But it did smell it the smell has changed over time. And I guess what I need to do is just buckle down and put a little pipette down in there and get a sample and just taste it and just see what it tastes like. Is there a reason to be afraid of this stuff that we just start with spontaneous, quote unquote, spontaneous fermentations?
Yeah, I think there is, and I think something I picked up perhaps from your Facebook page a while ago. There was an article about people who make Pruno or whatever they want to call it in prison out of different food scraps and fruit. And this causes death in prisons. And so why would that be? Well, basically, when you're doing uncontrolled fermentation, you are basically starting with food poisoning, going ahead with spoilage, and you're relying on the combination of either acidity or alcohol killing all that bad stuff. Mm. So that it's then safe to drink. So if you don't let it go long enough, or if it doesn't, for some reason, it doesn't ferment, it could have some bad stuff in it. So I think that, you know, you need to smell it. And it's a really nice idea to take some gravity because, when it changes to alcohol, of course, it just plummets. And, you know, that's a good way to tell. And then taste it. And I think that's all you have to do. And the main thing to do is to not have it right away. And people say, wow, you know, I did a backyard ambient batch and I tasted it 2 days later. And I'm thinking, why? I said, nothing had happened yet. I was like, yeah, you're just growing a lot of stuff in there that you're trusting that the alcohol and the acidity is going to kill off. Because we don't really want to drink a lot of E. coli, you know?
I've had my time with that.
Yeah, it might give us some nice... Supposedly, those things actually do contribute flavor. Mm. But they're inert by the time we want to drink it.
So maybe if you live on a cattle farm, you may not... You may not want to do the ambient fermentation.
I think it's fine. You just have to make sure that it actually gets fermenting, and you know you can usually tell. I mean, we've all made beer. We know what this does. So yeah, I think you if you tasted it and it was sickly sweet. I would spit it out. But I don't expect that would happen because, you know, everything likes to eat sugar. So.
Well, and there was quite a bit of activity in the flask on the stir plate. There was lots of bubbles and, lots of, in fact, there was a couple of waves of different activity. So, you know, I'm thinking that there may be a couple of populations of things in there that had their way with the sugars. I know I'm just a big chicken.
This is the good thing is that people, you know, people lived on fermented substances, you know, for how many, we don't even know how many thousands of years. This has kept our species alive in the face of water that wasn't safe to drink because, you know, generally it wants to ferment. We can observe it and know it's fermented and then it's actually much safer.
There you go. Well, Gail, this has been a ton of fun.
It has been fun, really fun.
Well, good. I hope you'll keep us updated on any more fun things that you want to put in your fermenters. And, if it's not for you putting pasta in your beer, who else is going to do it?
Well, that's why, you know, we all trust that there's going to be lots of homebrewers out there thinking outside the box, and that's what helps move the beer world forward.
Amen. Thanks, Gail.
Thank you, James.
Thanks again to Gail. Those were some really fun and tasty experiments. Hope that was inspirational to you. Lots of great info. If you are in the San Francisco area or are planning to visit there, you may want to check out Gail's site, beerbybart.com. I would love to live in a place where public transportation and great beer were paired up so nicely. So that's very cool. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You'll find our new bottle openers in our shop, or I hope you will. We may run out, but they'll be back. So if you don't see them on the shop, they will be back. Our Basic Brewing Growler bags are available. Protect your precious homebrew and craft beer as you take it from place to place. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Along with our combo deals, if we have the openers, also look for our shirts as well. Our brewer's logbooks are in the store, too. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are 9-inch anti-splash funnel with strainer and Orbit Ultralight 10-pattern turret pistol hose spray nozzle. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com as well. That's all until next time. Till then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dutz. And Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.